Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ashley Yamburian.
If you can keep your voice up a little bit into the microphone, that would be helpful. Thank you.
My name is Ashley Yamburian, and I represent the petitioner, Mr. Aram Dadizian, in this case.
Tell me how you say that. I tried.
My last name?
No, I got yours, the client's petitioner.
Dadizian.
Dadizian?
Dadizian.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, I would like to reserve at least 3 minutes for my rebuttal.
Okay.
So this case hinges on a red notice issued by the Interpol based on an allegation made by the government of Russia. The red notice itself is sketchy at best. It includes mistakes about basic information like the issue date of Mr. Dadizian's passport. It does not identify the arrest warrant or the court order, which is the basis for this red notice. And it summarizes some allegations without any support.
So how do we, the red notice sort of came in at the last minute, and if I understand the government's position at the time, just basically said, here it is, give whatever weight, you decide what you want to do with it.
That's correct.
So the question that I have, I understand that your client was found to be credible.
Correct.
Yes, so. Ma'am. And you put in certain evidence that these red notices are not necessarily reliable when it comes to Russia. So do we review the BIA's determination that there are serious reasons for believing that Mr. Dadizian has committed a serious non-political crime outside the United States as a conclusion of law, or is it a finding of fact?
I believe it was in a conclusion of law because that they, based on that, they precluded relief in the form of asylum and withholding of removal.
Would it be similar to review of the question of probable cause in let's say, a civil rights case or in other contexts where a higher court is trying to review a lower court's determination of probable cause, which some courts have characterized as a mixed question of law and fact?
That's correct, Your Honor. I think that is because it has some facts and some law in it, of course. But the first, I think the court or the immigration judge and the BIA should have addressed the burden issue because this issue never came up during the proceedings. No one ever mentioned that the red notice was a problem in terms of ineligibility, in terms of the bar. The government said give it limited weight. They did question him about it, but they never really said, well, this could make you ineligible.
So have you gotten any more information on – I realize this is outside the record, but have you gotten any more information on this red notice since then?
No, Your Honor.
So you don't know what other evidence could be – let's just say we agree – let's say hypothetically, if we were to agree with you and say, okay, just putting that in there without anything more – isn't substantial evidence. Go back and look at this and look at it more seriously. You don't know what other evidence would come in?
No, Your Honor. Actually, it would be the government's burden to show some evidence before the burden shifts on us under the Budiono case. So there is no evidence whatsoever. The red notice is just an allegation. It establishes no facts whatsoever. So, yes,
if it's not sufficient, are you saying that you just win here? Or if it's not sufficient, does it go back and say, we want to know more about this?
I think we win on this issue because the government had its chance to present the evidence and they didn't. I don't think it would be fair.
Forgive me, but when you say we win on this issue, you mean the bar?
Yes, Your Honor.
So just so your win in response to Judge Callahan's question, I just want to make sure I'm understanding you before you move on.
We win on the eligibility issue, and then
eligible. That's it.
Yes, because the judge, we also win on the asylum and withholding removal issue, because the facts clearly show that he suffered past persecution, and
you
that
have rulings from the immigration court on those issues.
No, we don't have a ruling.
Get back in response to Judge Callahan's question again. This is what I'm struggling with. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say he's ineligible if we say. That's error on this record, then it seems to me, and I want to hear your response, it seems to me the correct thing to do is to remand to reach the merits.
That would be one choice, Your Honor, yes.
Well, why wouldn't it be the only choice if the court didn't rule on it before?
Well, then.
I mean, we're not usually.
Fact.
We don't do things in the first instance for the most part, and in fact, Ventura discourages us from doing that.
Then you would remand the case so that the judge can make a ruling on the asylum issue.
Are there other red notices that come with more information than this one?
I don't know, Your Honor, because there are very few red notice cases.
So could you go through just looking at the face, you know, the four corners of the red notice, what are the discrepancies that you see on it?
The first discrepancy is that the passport, the number of the passport, we submitted a copy of that passport, and the issue date for the passport is incorrect. The
issue, I had two passports, though, right?
Well, there was one from the Russian Federation. For example, it says nationality. Well, sorry, it's under identity documents where it says issued. There is one that's 63033367 07. That passport, a copy of it, was submitted under tab Y in the record, and the issue date is not June 4, it's April 23, if I'm correct.
That's the second one. That's the 3053 one, as it says it's issued on June 4th. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes, no. The one that's on says issued on November 6, 2002.
Oh, so instead of November 6, it was issued when?
I think it was issued on April 23.
That's wrong.
Is that your client's birthday, or where's April? Do we have any idea where April 23 comes from?
No, it was the issue date for that passport. I can't find it right now.
That's in the record? The passport is
yes,
in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. It's under tab Y.
Okay, so we cited in denying, well, a couple of things.
There's
right?
also,
he,
I'm sorry.
He lost on CAT, right?
Yes, he did.
What evidence is in the record that he would be tortured as opposed to criminally prosecuted if he's returned? It seems to me that your argument's not very strong on the CAT.
Well, of course it is, Your Honor. There's a lot of evidence in the country reports where it says they torture people in prisons. And so we know for sure that he will be imprisoned, and so he will be tortured. And this
you know for sure he would be imprisoned?
Yes, because there's a red notice.
He'd be prosecuted. We don't know he would be in prison.
Well, he will be detained at least. He will be taken to jail as soon as he arrives there.
Okay, so that's your CAT evidence then?
Yeah, and there is other evidence that we have also cited.
Tell me what your CAT evidence is.
Give me 1 second, Your Honor. You mean from Russia or Armenia? Because the judge also removed him to designate Armenia as the country. And so it is our also position that if he goes to Armenia, Armenia will immediately hand him over to Russia. So he will end up in jail in Russia. And the
okay. In denying your client's relief, the BIA cited our decision in Belov versus Holder. And how do you distinguish Mr. Tatitsian's situation from that case?
Well, Your Honor, the Belov case, first of all, it's a very interesting choice by the BIA because it's not even a published decision. And in that case, the respondent in that case, there was a substantial evidence that supported the BIA determination. Belov had committed a serious offense. There was witness statements. There were even U.S. criminal trial. There was a criminal trial in the United States, and there were testimony from the different witnesses from his former business partners. A lot more evidence than that. There was a record. The record contained a transcript of the testimony of several witnesses from Russia who testified against Belov in the U.S. criminal trials. In addition to the Russian officials, Belov claims two of the former business associates also testified against Belov in that case. So there was a lot more. There is no case on point. There's no case that
relied. Is there any precedent for holding that an applicant's ineligible for immigration based solely on an Interpol red notice?
None, Your Honor. We've looked. None. There is nothing.
All right. Even well, I'm going to ask the other side about that, so be ready.
The last case that this court decided, Guan versus Barr, they just decided on May 30, 2009. Again, the petitioner had testified about the crime, and he freely admitted it. In our case, our client did not admit anything. He didn't even know what this was about, and the judge found him credible. So he was a credible witness, and he had actually testified or put it in his declaration before this red notice was even issued that they had threatened him that they would actually fabricate criminal charges against him.
Think of the hypothetical. Let's say, I know that he was found credible here, and I know that you did put in evidence that I think it was the FSB came around and started harassing him about his business and all of that. So I'm aware of all that evidence. Let's assume, hypothetically, that he was found not credible. Does that, would that be a weaker position for you to have?
No, because still...
Why not? Because if he was found not credible, then the red notice wouldn't be up against his testimony that he'd been harassed over his business.
Yes, I understand. But then the red notice itself is an allegation, and the government has to bring some evidence, not allegation, that there was a crime that was committed.
You're not getting my softball here.
She's asking you whether it wouldn't be focusing on, I think we're trying to focus on the positive credibility determination that your client has.
Yes.
That makes your case stronger.
Absolutely.
But if he was found not credible, hypothetically, you would be in a weaker situation, would you not?
Hypothetically, maybe, but not...
Hypothetically, yes.
Hypothetically,
but you're
yes.
not in that situation.
No.
But I'm just. But when we ask hypotheticals, that if there's got to be some hypothetical where someone would lose, and you lose credibility if you can't see that hypothetical.
No, Your Honor, I do see that hypothetical. I understand. I agree with you that. The case
would that
would
be a weaker,
weaker
case?
Yes, it would be a weaker
okay,
case.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
The
I'm
only
asking.
Thing is that what I want to say, I want to stress out that the government has the burden to show some evidence indicates that it was a crime was committed.
That's your point.
Regardless of what my client.
Okay, I got that. Let's save your time for rebuttal. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, we've set this. Go ahead and state your appearance for the record.
May please the court, Your Honor. Tim Remnitz on behalf of the United States Attorney General.
So if we can just jump to the issue here where, okay, it isn't hypothetical. We know that the IJ, that he was found credible. And in his testimony, he did testify as to problems with the FSB, and he was getting audited, and there were all sorts of there is that in the evidence. So, and when you put the red notice in, you said, hey, here it is for whatever weight you want to do it. Is there any precedent out there that would make someone ineligible based on solely on a red notice?
There's no precedent.
Okay. So why not here? Do you have any more information about this red notice?
Government does not have more information on the red notice.
You could get more information, couldn't you?
Well, we'd have to get it from the Russian government, and that might be difficult, I'd imagine, but we have not reached out to the Russian government in this case.
Well, what if there was evidence in the record, I think in an article that was put into evidence by that the Russians are known to be less than reputable about issuing these, and there have been instances where they just keep issuing them until someone will accept the red notice. But and probably in this day and age, we might have some skepticism of the Russian government about that. So do you think that red notice is enough?
Government believes that red notice is enough. When you look at...
But what if they made it up and there's nothing more? Like in, I think in... in Belov, even though it's not precedent for this, there was quite a bit more in the record that would tend to support that there was something here. What if they just made it up to harass him?
That is a plausible theory of the case, and petitioners submitted background evidence to that effect. And going to the standard of review, which the panel questioned petitioner about, it is a factual determination. It's a balancing of evidence to see whether or not this bar was met or not. And so we have two competing theories.
Why is that a legal question? I mean, what are the disputed facts? My understanding, in probable cause context, it's generally considered de novo, except that deference is given to any findings below as to facts. What facts? Here the facts seem relatively, what the record is the record is. I don't see any dispute. It's the interpretation of that and how you apply the legal standard of serious questions. Well, so that sounds like a legal question to me.
Well, first, I would note that every court to consider this bar so far has applied substantial evidence to this bar.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you just said.
Every court to consider this particular ineligibility bar has applied the substantial evidence standard to it. But moreover, it's not so much, it's balancing evidence. Do they have enough evidence, as petitioner was talking about, this initial showing you have to make, which is the regulation of 1240.8D, where the government has to show there has to be some indication in the record that an ineligibility bar applies. And then the burden shifts to the petitioner to prove it does not apply. So it's really, is there enough evidence to kick in petitioner's burden? So it's
It's so important, counsel, that there's a positive credibility determination. He's given this very, that we must defer to, and his story is very compelling.
Well, it's really the government, the agency, found it less persuasive than the red notice, because as he, petitioner submitted 28J, which submitted the case of Karas, which discusses a Russian red notice. It was in the matter, the posture was for a bond hearing, but it states that you can't simply rely on the fact that Russia has, in some instances, sought to politically persecute its opponents by seeking to abuse the Interpol system. It has to be something more, because certainly not every red notice based of Russian origin is void in amnesia.
Well, I don't think we need to go that far, certainly, but what I'm looking at is the positive credibility determination in his story, which I'll just summarize by saying, you know, his story of the events leading up to this. And then we do have, as you indicated, some concern about red notices generally. And then this particular red notice has some discrepancies on the face of it, and it doesn't have what other red notices might have, which is a lot more backup to explain, you know, the nature of the charges. And so that constellation is pretty concerning to me.
I think in many of the other cases that petitioner cited, there's more evidence, there's witness expert testimony.
Right.
Well, and also, too, it seems like it could relate to what he was found credible on, the instances of harassment that went on in Russia. If you accept that it's credible, that there's nothing from this that I can't tell that they're not talking about the same thing. And so couldn't that shift it back to the government to say, well, you got to come up with a little more? I would agree with you in some instances. And then there was also the article that said that Russia's been known to issue less than credible red notices.
Well, actually, the media articles don't actually cite a single instance where Interpol has not caught Russia trying to manipulate the system. So what the media article states...
Well, one of the articles from the Financial Times says that only 3% of red notice applications are reviewed in any detail. It sounds like there's very little review. It's almost a rubber stamp. There are some examples where it has, where it turned down, it was a Browder case, whatever it was, where they turned down several times. But it seems like that's the exception rather than the rule. The majority of these, in general, are just stamped in... Do you know differently?
I think to show there's a rule that Interpol has issued or that Russia isn't able to abuse the system, there has to be some evidence that it has successfully done so.
In this case, you mean? Do you think it has
in
to be
any case,
in this case,
I don't believe there's nothing questioning the reliability of the red notice except petitioner's testimony in this case. In particular...
Right. Wait, hold on. Forgive me for interrupting, but do you have a response then to counter her allegations that there are inconsistencies, errors on the face of the notice?
No, there is an irregularity with the passport number.
Are there other irregularities?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, and what about the lack of detail in the red notice about the who, what, when, where, why, how?
I don't know what red notices typically have as level of detail. We do know there's different levels of notices that Interpol provides, and this is the highest level. So this is the one. there's lesser categories. Like there's a red notice is the highest, and there's, I believe, orange below it. And
I wanted to talk about the same color. Have you seen other red notices?
I've not seen other red notices. It doesn't typically come up at this.
Do you know anything about what standard of proof is required within the Russian government before they either issue an arrest warrant or issue?
We do not, but we do know from the media articles that Interpol does vet the Russian government's claims when they try to come to Interpol with charges.
At a 3% rate.
Well,
we
only have evidence that they have thwarted the Russian government's attempts in those media articles.
If you were called upon to show more than that, so that it's not a pretermitted situation, you would be the only one that had access to that. I mean, you could call the State Department or you could do something like that, because obviously, I don't think any court would have any interest. Sometimes we get these cases where people ask for asylum and say that they would be persecuted, and it turns out that they're like Eichmann or something. They're the persecutor, and no one would want to stop someone from going back to a country to be persecuted for war crimes or to get asylum wrongly or anything like that. But we don't really have that situation here. If it does really indicate that it's something, there's something there, I think, of course, that would be appropriate to deny asylum.
Correct.
There's not a lot.
I think the problem is Russia, correct? If this is a red notice issued based on British origin or French origin, I don't think we'd be having this discussion.
I got one from China. I don't want to say that it's just Russia. I'm just looking at what I've got in front of me, that's all.
Sure, but it's a problematic country when it comes to Interpol, and that's why we're here having this debate about this particular red notice. But there's no particularized evidence for petitioner that these charges were fabricated in his case, besides his testimony, was deemed credible, but found not persuasive, not as much as Interpol issuing this red notice, which is really the two competing theories of the case, and that's where the standard of review comes into play. Because if you have two reasonable theories of the case, one of which being he committed a crime in Russia and he absconded to the United States, and then Russia went to Interpol and made these charges known to Interpol. The other theory is that Russia was trying to take his business, and so they fabricated these charges against him. So there's just two competing theories, and it's an unsubstantiated with his testimony. It's really saying the Russian government's conspiring against me. Look how they've conspired against other people.
But I'm hearing you say right now, I mean, if you present something and you say, do whatever you want with it, I mean, can you represent to this court that you think that it's valid?
This goes to notice, whether or not you get an opportunity to respond to the red notice?
Well, I mean, obviously, you don't want to send someone back on something that's bogus. I mean, you're the government. We expect higher of the government. You wouldn't want to do that. And you were not the lawyer at the, and so that person just didn't seem to just said, well, hey, I've got this. Here it is. I don't really know anything about it. Do what you want with it. Didn't even really advocate for anything with it, but just, hey, I have this.
I think that the merits hearing shows a little differently, because there was a lot of questioning about the red notice at the merits hearing from DHS. So DHS submitted the red notice prior to the merits hearing. The petitioner had two evidentiary responses to the red notice before the merits hearing. One, that's where we get these media articles from. And then during the merits hearing, we had DHS asking, did you commit this serious crime?
And he said no.
And he says no.
And he was found credible.
He was found credible, but the agency was within its discretion to find it not as plausible as the red notice.
Okay. What about him being, he claims he's stateless.
Well,
how do you respond to that? The BIA upheld his removal to Armenia because he testified that he was born in what is now Armenia and that he served in the army of that country. How is that really responsive to his evidence that he's stateless?
Under the removal statute, he doesn't have to be removed to a country to which he's a citizen. I think that's the misunderstanding with petitioner. There's other options, where he was born being one, or his country of last habitual residence. So we're not saying he's a citizen of Armenia or a citizen of Russia. We are saying we can designate Armenia as removal because he was born there.
Regardless of citizenship.
Regardless of citizenship, and they're likely to take him back. And if they don't, take him back, then that's a Zadvydas habeas claim. He can get an order of supervision at that point because we can't remove him. But it's not a citizenship question. No, Your Honor, unless you have questions about the cat protection issue.
On the cat, I asked on the cat, what's your position? Let's say hypothetically that we don't agree with you on the other. Do you think this court can affirm on the cat?
Yes. I don't believe the record compels the conclusion, which is likewise a standard review for cat, that he has established a clear probability of torture in either Armenia or Russia because he has waived his past torture claim in his brief. And all he has is general background evidence from the State Department reports for Armenia. And so you don't have to get to Russia at that point. But Russia as well, it's based on a revocation of his citizenship, but he's still given a permit to live there. And otherwise, an incident in January 2015 where three individuals came to his home and he didn't require medical attention afterwards, though there was a beating. And he testified that he had blood in his urine afterwards. Doesn't rise to the level of past torture. Doesn't compel the conclusion that this was torture. And so he would not meet his eligibility.
What about petitioner's argument that prospectively it is highly likely if sent back to Russia, either through Armenia or directly to Russia, that he will be prosecuted and I guess assumes that he will then be incarcerated. And then once you get into the incarceration world, there are country reports, there is evidence of torture.
This may have been in the merits hearing. I think DHS may have mentioned this, but if not, I can inform the court that Armenia does not have an extradition treaty with Russia, and they don't extradite to Russia. So his fears that Armenia would simply turn him over to Russia would be unfounded.
There is something in the record or not in the record?
I believe it may have come up at the merits hearing with DHS, but I looked it up myself, and there is no extradition treaty.
So that would be a judicial notice thing?
If it's not in the record, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I respectfully disagree. There is evidence in the record that Russia and Armenia are part of a commonwealth, Asian, it's called, I forget now.
Do you have
name,
a record site?
I do, Your Honor. It's it's a document that was submitted under, I think, tab.
You need to talk into the mic.
Oh. The Commonwealth of Independent States, that of the former republics, of the former Soviet Socialist Republics that came together after the dissolution of the USSR to cooperate in political, economic, environmental, humanitarian, culture, and other spheres.
Council,
and that's
site,
in the record.
What's the record site?
The record site? I will. It is under tab. Since I found it, page 500 of the CAR, Commonwealth of Independent States. And also I wanted to touch up on some things that the government does agree that Russia is a problematic country. My client's theory was found credible, Your Honor. Counsel for the government was arguing that there is a theory the government has and my client's theory, and that my client's theory was found credible. DHS did not even mention anything about the reliability of the red notice as far as ineligibility is concerned, not in their argument, not in their closing argument, nor did they even take the red notice seriously. It was the judge who came up with this ineligibility at the last minute in his decision. And there were questions, but his answers were found credible, and he didn't know anything about it. He doesn't just claim that he's stateless. He was also given a document, which the government has in its own possession, for stateless persons. He was given by the Russian government when he came to the border and applied for asylum. That's the document he presented. And it's also part of the record, Your Honor. So,
would you agree that he can be sent back to a country of his birth, regardless of citizenship under the statute?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
That he can be deported back to his country of birth, even if he's not a citizen of that country.
His country of birth no longer exists. That's the former Republic of Armenia, Soviet Republic of Armenia. That doesn't exist anymore. He has no connection to that country legally. He went to Russia.
But the government said, though, you can send someone back to where they were born, but then Armenia could say, we don't want him. And then that would be the end of the story there.
But then the government is making Mr. Dadinsan show that he will be tortured in Armenia by designating that country. And first of all, that will happen, and because he has suffered past persecution and past torture in Armenia, as he testified credibly. And also, even if he's sent to Armenia, he will immediately be taken to Russia based on the red notice. We don't want him to be sent anywhere, Your Honor.
Where should he be? If you lose, where should he be sent?
He's stateless. He has nowhere to go.
So then that means they can't do anything? I don't think that's the right answer.
He was given a stateless person's document.
That doesn't
issued
translate
by the government
into being
of Russia.
Immune from deportability, though. That's what
but they can designate
him.
The country.
Okay, we've given you extra time. Your time's up. All right, this matter will stand submitted. Thank you both for your argument.
Thank you.